And welcome back to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin, your host from Coins Plus. Coins Plus, as always, sponsors the show. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. We are always actively involved in the purchase and sale of all forms of rare coins and precious metals, scrap gold, jewelry, and diamonds. Been doing it in a number of years. This is our 21st fiscal year. Coins Plus can be reached at 444-0044 in Spokane. Outside Spokane, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN. And through our website at coinsplus.com, where we also post all of our previously recorded radio shows. So here we go. What am I looking at right now? I'm looking online here at a article I tripped over, which wasn't what I was going to do the show on, but it's Al-Qaeda newspaper shows Steve Bannon and quotes him as saying Islam cannot be stopped by peaceful means. So they've got a picture of the front of the newspaper. It's the Yemen-based Al-Qaeda newspaper in the Arabian Peninsula. It's called Al Masra. It features President Donald Trump's chief strategist and former Breitbart News chief executive chairman Steve Bannon on the front page in a column claiming Bannon is seeking war against Islamic fascism. Now, folks, here's something interesting. This I tripped over this on Breitbart News, right? So this is the ex-editor of Breitbart, so they're covering it. Where is the rest of the news on this stuff? Because if you go on and read this article, it's shocking. I mean, they basically are saying that Steve Bannon wants armed struggle with the Islams, with Islam, that he believes that the forces of Islam cannot be stopped by peaceful means. You and I both know that's true. Citing a conversation, it says a Danish journalist says he had with Bannon in May of 16. And then he goes on and goes through the article and blah, blah, blah. He says, quotes Bannon as, we're now, I believe, at the beginning stages of global war against Islamic fascism. Folks, this is true. I mean, we know that's true. But the fact that they're putting a target on a guy like that, you think about the level of visibility of these people in the White House and the fact that, you know, the enemy we face now, I mean, obviously I haven't been around for thousands of years, but the enemy we face now in Islam is got to be as ruthless and as bad as anything this country has ever faced. I mean, hands down. Our founding, people don't realize our founding fathers had a tremendous war against Islam. It was a critical piece of who we are. You know, the name Muslim comes from Musulman, which means to submit. And we have, you know, this country really went to war with these guys from the very start. It was the reason for the beginning of our Navy. And, you know, Obama opened the doors to this stuff in a way that has never been done. I mean, it's just interesting the different perceptions, I guess, that happen through time and religious impact. And when, you know, we get someone like Obama in office, and he absolutely turns all of our conventional thinking on its head, and he begins to open the floodgates to countless Muslims and people of Islamic faith, which he shares, and he begins to shut down nations of Christian origin. Like I said, I discovered that Obama pretty much put a moratorium on all visas coming out of the Caribbean. Well, the Caribbean is very Judeo-Christian-based, very. Much of it was founded or established on the reign of the Queen, which, you know, they did have, manifest destiny as a mindset that they were essentially the world's missionaries. And Granted, you know, they brought in a Catholic-type religion. That's the religion of the island. I was on St. Lucia, but I was by Barbados and Grenada and all this. And those areas are, they're very Christian. There's a very small Muslim faction there. And yet the countries, some of the most heinous countries in the world, folks, when you get into Somalia and Yemen and Sudan, I mean, these places are the darkest, hardest, nastiest things in the world that you can even imagine. These places are just unbelievable. And Obama just says, bring them in. He's got the attitude, I think, that I think he thinks there's radicals there. I mean, I don't know. I'm giving him benefit of the doubt. What I'm saying isn't consistent with his behavior, but he acts like they're refugees. But I think in reality, Obama has no fear of Islam taking over the world. Well, the only way you could have no fear is to be Islamic yourself. I mean, people who are of Muslim faith are looking forward to the great jihad and the coming of the 12th Imam or the Mahdi to rescue them. And so I think it's pretty clear that Obama had a Muslim faith. And, you know, I mean, granted, he's hypothetically gone now, but he's not. His whole legacy lives on. His attitude, his spirit is what's putting the hardcore attack on Trump right now. I mean, this false Russian narrative of this Russian hacking garbage that they will not let go is absolutely gone. I'm not going to read this, but I found this website on apologetics that goes into extensive detail of the writings of our founding fathers pertaining to Islam. And they've got registers of people coming here. They call prenatural energy of a fanatic and the fraudulent spirit of an imposter proclaimed himself as a messenger from heaven and spread desolation and delusion over an extensive portion of the earth, adopting from the sublime conception of the Mosaic law the doctrine of one omnipotent God. He connected, and he goes on, and he basically in this extensive writing explains how some Islamic leader is basically just destroying the earth, and he's basically talking about, he says, and this is written by, I want to say John Adams, John Quincy Adams on Islam. One quote is, he says, the essence of his doctrine was violence and lust, to exalt the brutal over the spiritual part of human nature. Is that not the truth? And then it goes on, and it says, this is John Adams, one of our greatest founding fathers. The precept of the Quran is perpetual war against all who deny that Muhammad is the prophet of God. The vanquished may purchase their lives by the payment of tribute. The victorious may be appeased by a false and delusive promise of peace. And the faithful follower of the prophet Muhammad may submit to the imperious necessities of defeat. In other words, that's what Muslim is, to submit. But the command to propagate the Muslim creed by the sword is always obligatory when it can be made effective. The commands of the prophet may be performed alike by fraud or by force. This is John Adams, my friends. He was a president of the United States. You know, this is where we've come from. This is where we were. And look at where we are today. I think that's very important to understand where we are as a nation. Trump is he's very pragmatic. And what I mean by that is that he's a businessman. He does things that are practical, meaningful, effective, and will be successful. They're terrified of him because why? Because he wants to win. People who want to win don't care about all the other stuff. I mean, I'll agree, Trump walked over him like a stepping stone on his way to office. They never expected him to win. Everybody who was defeated by Trump just stood in shock, in carnage. I mean, literally, not the best. You know, he did use a little bit of a scorched earth policy for sure. But the thing is, people think it all happened by accident. Donald Trump's first, very first political campaign manager, who I think foolishly resigned once Obama got, or Obama, did I say Obama? Trump. Trump's original campaign manager who foolishly resigned, not Corey Lewandowski before him, which I should get his name, but right as Trump got the nomination, he resigned and kind of tried to throw Trump under the bus. And he, you know, he told people he wasn't ready and all this kind of stuff. But he said that Trump had done so much research on media and ratings that he had learned that the outrageous creates a following, that he had studied, you know, like when he got in the battle with Rosie O'Donnell, his ratings went through the roof. And, you know, it's completely contrary to what the media wants you to do. Folks, if you think about it, years back, a couple years ago, you remember Brexit. The shocking vote for Great Britain to separate from the European Union absolutely caught the world by surprise. The media had done polls. They had predicted that it wouldn't go. All the poll numbers said no way. There was a 5 or 6 point spread. And everybody came out and they voted to separate. Shocking. Very similar to what happened with Trump, with one fundamental difference. I'm sure you don't read British news. I scan it, but a lot of it makes its way here. The media accepted it. The media in Great Britain said, wow, we got it wrong. We don't understand the will of the people. We need to dig into this and figure out where we went wrong. They realized that the conservative majority is a silent majority. As a result, British media, British press decided to move more center. They decided to make their publications a bit more conservative to cater to these people. What has our media done? Extreme activism, just yelling, screaming, just outrage. The media, folks, the press, is what they call the fourth estate. What that means is there's three major branches of government. The executive branch, that's the president. The judicial branch, that's the Supreme Court. And the legislative branch is the House. The House writes bills. The House writes bills. The president is supposed to enforce them, and the Supreme Court is supposed to protect the Constitution. Obviously, that's not the case anymore. But they say the fourth estate is the press, because without them, the rest of them cannot exist, hypothetically. The purpose of giving the press absolute free rein was to be the eyes and the ears of you and I, the people, to look out for us. Now, and then what comes along later is Marxism, socialism. Socialism, folks, around the turn of the century was absolutely politically correct. It was a popular philosophy. Reason being, people had come out of some tough depressions. You know, the country was growing and we were having an industrial revolution, the electrical revolution. There was a segregation between rich and poor. Working conditions were brutal. Unions were doing their work at the time. I mean, granted, people were feeling a little rough. You know, industrialization was taking over. And they wanted a hand. They wanted a union. The socialistic mindset starts out as a union mindset. They're like, I need my big brother to have my back. the working man feels like he's been used and abused. And, you know, and a lot of that's a victim's mentality, because the fact of the matter is our attitude plays a tremendous role in our existence. But I don't want to diminish or take away from those real experiences and real stories people have. But I am saying a lot of what people experience in life has so much to do with their attitude and perception. So around the turn of the century, socialism was a very popular concept. And what began to happen for some reason is the media began to become extremely liberal. Activists become journalists. Well, what's happened over time, I can go back on the history of our universities, how they went liberal, you know, and it's interesting, to put it lightly. They wanted to maintain, the big money lobbied for years for government control because they had power and money. And when you had people with extraordinary amounts of money that they could control the government like a puppet, they wanted the government to have control of the people so that they could just, you know, it's just a straight line. I control the government controls the people, you know, et cetera. A lot of it is a great part of this socialism that you've got to realize. Socialism is in complete contradiction to human nature. You and I are created to better ourselves or not. I mean, you and I are created to do what we're called to do. In some cases, we will compete. That's called free market. In other cases, you pursue your expertise, I will pursue mine. There's no guarantees in life. When I was growing up, they used to tell us life isn't fair. Kids don't learn that anymore. We live in the era of everyone gets a trophy. We live in the era of there are no winners and losers. Folks, there are winners and losers in the world. And you know, like Ricky Bobby said from Talladega Nights, if you're not first, you're last. And that's not true, but it's funny. But, you know, that's life. You win or you lose. What, you know, these people bust their tail. There's schools that wanted to stop giving away valedictorian and all these other awards because it wasn't fair to the other children who didn't have as much ability. Well, come on, folks. I mean, is this really what we've become? And so as socialism has spread, principles of Karl Marx is propaganda through the media, controlling the media, just like Russia does today, the Pravda. And slowly they have done it. They have absolute socialistic control of most media sources. Now, I said a minute ago, if you were an activist, you'd become a journalist. Well, what happens if you're a conservative journalist? There's far fewer outlets for you to work to, for, whatever you want to say, you know, or with, than conservatives. So you're put in such a hard spot if you're a conservative. You're going to get blackballed, shut down, doors slammed. It's tough. It's just not an open-door environment. But the liberal mindset of the media is extremely socialistic. And you look at this, and I see a country formed by God. I see it based on, you know, biblical Judeo-Christian precepts. And it breaks my heart, to be completely honest with you. And it does make you wonder, Lord, you put this whole system together. You inspired these men. What have we done, and where are we going? We are on the wrong path right now. Without any doubt, we've got at least a sufficient president in there. You know what's crazy is everything that Trump says about deporting illegal immigrants, you can go online, I did it today, and find absolute quotes from Obama and Clinton that say the same thing, only more stringent, more pungent, more pointed than Trump has. But the media just will not give the guy the slightest break. Trump had this terrific speech the other night. his State of the Union. He had the State of the Union speech. And the next, I mean, it was wonderful. It was his greatest speech ever. And so what do? The next day, they go crazy about Jeff Sessions, our now Attorney General, having a meeting with the ambassador of Russia during the campaign. Okay, during the campaign, Jeff Sessions was a senator. Senators meet with ambassadors. Jeff Sessions, in that period of time, said he'd met with over 25 ambassadors. I get very frustrated in many situations with these parties' inability to defend themselves. Everything that we're dealing with today, with all this false Trump narrative about his supposed Russian ties, comes back to a sarcastic, what I thought was funny, comment he made about, you know, Russian hacking, saying, well, if they're hacking in, I hope they got, you know, copies of Hillary's deleted emails, because I'd love to see them. And he made some comment like that that they said was encouraging this and encouraging that. It's funny how the left, you know, it's just all spin. It's if they want to play games, they take things too serious. They're oversensitive, you know, all this stuff. It was all a joke. And then what happens is now they've lost. They got their butts whooped and they don't know what to do. So they are being the most obstructionist crybabies possible. They're not acting at whatsoever like adults at all. This is not adult behavior. This is not adult behavior. And where I scratch my head, and I like to obviously think of myself as a believer, it's a pretty important part of my life, I don't get the mindset that you can support as a Christian a party that encourages every form of immorality and absolute heinous behavior, impropriety, lies, twisting, deceit, homosexuality, abortion. I don't get it. If you're a believer, what are you doing on that side of the fence? I mean, I know politics gets hot, and people, you know, they just refuse to look at the facts. People seem ingrained in their belief systems. Debates don't seem to do much good. But what we see going on in this country right now, for me, is of serious, severe, serious concern. And I think it should be of concern to you as well. And I think you should do what you can to look out for it. You know, a couple things I'll highlight right now. Something that's going on around the U.S. is kind of interesting. The state's attorneys generals are suing the federal government in multiple states, suing Donald Trump. It looks bad on the surface, where Republican state's attorneys generals are actually filing suit against Donald Trump as president. But what they're doing is this is the way that they're cleaning up a lot of these environmental regulations. They come into these cities and states and they put these bizarre regulations on that basically prevent growth, they prevent development, they stop, you know, every generation has its own perception. And when they get brainwashed that all development is bad and it destroys, and they don't teach them logic or common sense or analysis to look around and say, look at the world around you. It's all developed. I mean, that's what we do. And they put these things in place. A good friend of mine, I will just say, in a city, let me see how to preface this. A good friend of mine is from a very wealthy family in a city with a private college that is super popular in sports. And their family has given a massive endowment to this college. And one of their sons is in a high position in the city. And the son that I'm talking about was doing a development on a river And they had it all approved, ready to go. Beautiful condo complex, docks for boats, beautiful, beautiful. And then he came up against a brick wall where the law students of this city, of this private college, began as a project to go after and try to hinder and hamper this man's project to keep it from going forward. And they started to basically abuse environmental laws and put in place all these crazy things. It was a college project. But this person that they were hindering came from a family who'd given a substantial, very substantial endowment to this college every year. And he went to the head of the legal department of that college, because it was the legal department that was putting him through the ringer, told him who he was, explained the situation. The head of the legal department said, "I don't really care, you know, we're doing what we do." And long story short is, you know, he ended up, their family ended up, you know, temporarily, it turned out, pulling the endowment. And then at that point, the university got involved and said, "Hey, what's going on?" They ended up getting rid of the head of the legal department over it, of the legal education department. But the problem with it after the fact, it was all stopped. But the problem after the fact is, after these, you know, regulations had been imposed and put in place, that project was never able to be finished. Because these environmental regulations, once they're handed down by the Fed, can only be repealed by the state's attorney general suing the government for relief from this regulation in order to have it overturned. It's absolutely crazy. So they had imposed this crazy, you know, regulation, you know, limitation, moratorium on this building project over ducks or something, which obviously wouldn't be heard at all. It's easy in developments, you know, leave a little room on the shore for the ducks. I mean, they're not getting hurt at all. They have docks and water and everything else. And they just can't do it. The problem with our state, Washington, is that our state's one of the most liberal in the United States. I mean, our governor is constantly up in arms against against Trump. Even the, you know, the Ninth District Supreme Court, we were one of the states that brought suit against Trump over his supposed immigration ban. And like, when I say I get sick of the way we don't defend ourselves, or they don't, I mean, they don't even, you know, people say, "Oh, he's banning all people. He's banning entire countries. He's banning Muslims." No, he put a temporary 90-day moratorium on entry visas and refugees from these countries till they can get their feet under them to figure out what the heck is going on. Period. Simple as that. But the media is blowing stuff so out of proportion, folks. This is the problem with what I mentioned earlier. As the fourth estate, you know, with as entrusted with as much authority as the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of our government, the media is given free rein, and they have abused the tar out of that freedom, and they are literally tearing this country apart at the seams. People tend to believe what they read. Why? I don't know. Why do we have to be taught to be able to distinguish fact from opinion? I don't know. I do know, according to the Dunning and Kruger effect, the more ignorant somebody is, the smarter they think they are. And that they also underestimate the ability of the intelligent. The intelligent people underestimate their own ability and overestimate the ability of others. It's a most ironic thing. So when people lack the intelligence to actually analytically dissect these things, they don't even know they're dumb, excuse me, but they just don't know. And why we are given the, you know, you've heard this term, ignorance is bliss. The Dunning and Kruger effect proves it. As an employer for many, many years, I've employed as in different facets of my career. I've been employed, or, you know, been around employees, you know, hundreds, if not thousands. And I've seen this effect. There's very few people that are really on their way up in the world. Most people will stop. You know, they're going to stop themselves. You bring them constructive criticism, they stop. They act shocked. They act blown away. They act, you know, it's just they don't embrace the continuous state of improvement. They just want to be left alone. And they'll say, why don't you just focus on what I did right? Well, most of the time what we do right in our job is our job. I mean, we don't need to be patted on the back for doing a good job. That's what God's for. We work as unto the Lord. We don't work to get praise from man. If we get praise from man, great. That is extra. But what we really work for in most cases is a paycheck. And the paycheck is the reward, really, for a job well done. Now, if you're not making enough money, folks, it's important that you develop a good resume and you're out looking to replace that employment, you know, all the time. But you don't want to be, I can tell you as a prior employer or employer now, but in banking and looking over resumes, you don't want to be a job hopper. You want to think about how strong and bulletproof the jobs look, how solid are the corporations. You know, those kinds of things matter. What's your capacity? What's your level of responsibility? You want to build a resume that's solid as a rock. But as I've mentioned before, when you do a job, you do it well. You do it the best. You know, you dress better than everybody else. You work harder than everybody else. Folks, I'm going to tell you, the way you dress says so much about you. And you may be the guy or gal that just, you know, dresses so bad. My a relative of mine had to go into a court custody hearing, and she dressed up very nice in a wonderful suit, and you know, she's just a very beautiful girl. And she said so many of these women that are in court for custody or divorce are literally in sweats and a sweatshirt coming before these judges. I mean, folks, that's foolish. I don't care what you're doing in life. Dress for success. They have had study after study. The way you dress affects the way you perform. It affects the way you behave. It affects the way people perceive you and decisions they make about you and impressions they make of you. Do not dress like a pig. You know, you say, oh, but my favorite pair of jeans, I got run over by the tractor and got stuck in the cat track. Ripped the knee off and my grandma sewed it back on back in 1978. I love those jeans. Well, get rid of them or wear them when no one's around. But you know what? You want to present yourself as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to the Lord, but also to others. When you go to church, I cannot believe the way people dress up in church. You're going to the house of the Lord. And people come in a t-shirt and ripped up jeans. Are you kidding me? If that's the best you got, go buy something. You say you can't afford it? Go to Walmart. You can buy a sports coat at Walmart for $19. You can buy a button-up shirt for $8. If, you know, save up your money if that's too much. But I mean, dress like you care. When you go to the house of the Lord, dress like you care. That's the house of the Lord. When you pray to God, do you get on your knees? Do you sit up? You know, I've been with people that I've said, let's pray. And they want to lay back in a chair, slouched back, slopped back. You know, are you serious? We're going before the God of the universe. What kind of an attitude is that? If you heard the President of the United States was coming in, I don't care if it's Obama or whoever, I mean, it's still the position. If the President of the United, if you were going to meet with the President of the United States, would you dress like a pig? And when you, if you had a request to make of him, would you slouch back in a chair, half asleep? And that's a president. We're dealing with the God of the universe. You got to act like it. Don't forget who you're dealing with and who you're approaching. All those things matter. You don't think that matters to God? Absolutely. What do you think he says over and over? The beginning is of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. We have lost that fear. Fear is a powerful thing. The word that it uses means in awe of. in wondrous awe of. You're afraid because he's so magnificent. He's so huge. He's so incredible. He's so powerful. Treat him as the God of the universe. Show that level of respect. That's my two cents on that. Let me bomb off a couple other things here. I didn't even have none of this stuff's down. It just comes off my heart. So we've seen this contrarianism in our government. When the Republicans are in control, we have a much more civility. When the Dems are in control, when the Dems are in control, you see they're much more civil. When they're out of control, they're absolutely disobedient. They're absolutely rebellious. It is a spirit of destruction. The devil comes to steal, kill, and destroy, which is what Saul Alinsky, Rules for Radicals, encourages everybody to do, to personalize and polarize and isolate and destroy. Nothing about the Bible where it says edify and build up, let no unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only such as is edifying for those who hear, that it may build them up, you know, in the body of Christ or whatever. It doesn't say the body of Christ, but the point is you need to build those up, those around you up with what you speak and what you say, and, you know, so that their hearing is good. I think we're going to see a continuation of these attacks go on and on. We've hit an all-time low in disrespect for our president. And when I was in the Caribbean, I sat in a area with a TV down by the beach, and two separate occasions I had older couples just shaking their heads saying, what has happened to our nation? The disrespect for the President of the United States. Even when people disagreed fundamentally, it was still the President of the United States. They still honored and respected the position. We have in this nation far more respect for the CEO of Facebook than we do the President of the United States, the most powerful man in the world. And we have begun to see small changes or maybe significant in Trump's behavior. He's learning. He's wise. Plus, you have to understand there's no person on planet Earth who is the recipient and benefit of more prayers than the President of the United States. So many people pray for him, and I've wondered recently, what is the impact of that? What is the power of that? And I would encourage you to pray for the president of our United States. It's very important. Kind of off a different trail, and then I'll talk finances a little bit. Desensitization. I was tripping over some reading here. Here's some interesting facts. Kids who shoot up schools all play video games. Okay, then it goes. It's basically every single youth under the age of, I can't remember, it was 24, who's ever done, well, first of all, every single school shooting by a student is done by a student who's addicted to video games. Video games can be so dangerous. And if you're from my generation, the word game is a defense dropper. Why? We used to sit around and play checkers or chess or Parcheesi or Crazy Eights or Monopoly or, you know, when I was a little kid, chutes and ladders. Little board games. They are completely innocent. They're just fun ways to kill time. Now we use the word game, video game, and then we go, oh, it's just a game. No, what it is a simulated brain programming device that literally simulates reality at such an extent that the brain reacts and responds as if it's reality. And then it proceeds to allow the person to conduct themselves in illegal and sinful, destructive ways. The absolute breach of the Ten Commandments. So by the time these kids, there was an interview after, I can't remember which high school shooting, where the psychologist said, so, you know, why did you decide to kill people today? He said, I do it every day. the psychologist said, what do you mean? Then the guy explained on his video games, he does it every single day. If you've got kids or grandkids, limit the time. If it's your babysitter, get rid of it. You cannot let a video game babysit your children. Now, everyone's wired a little different. Some kids, maybe not so much of a threat. Doesn't matter. Why take the risk? It's kind of like saying, well, you know, most people aren't addicted to opiates, so I'm going to give all my kids opiates and hope none of them get addicted, which, by the way, is kind of an interesting example. My opinion of this whole opiate craze scares me a lot, and I'll tell you why. They're overblowing everything. The statistics I have, you know, my collegiate studies and postgrad and everything is all in statistics. The statistics that they're using now to quote opiate-related deaths is so skewed and so malarkey. Their criteria is if someone dies with opiates in their system, it gets counted as an opiate-related death. Here's the problem. How many people in the hospital have opiates in their system when they die? About all of them. That counts. How many people on the street take ecstasy, heroin, excessive amounts of alcohol, pot, and opiates? But when they die, a lot of them. Those are counted as opiate deaths. Now they're starting to take people. There's 17,000 NSAID deaths a year. That's non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Folks, that means ibuprofen, Aleve, these things. If you're taking these every day on a regular basis, you better be prepared for organs to shut down. They kill 17,000 people a year and 170,000 chronic hospitalizations because of them per year. They're very seriously destructive drugs. The reason I say the opiate thing scares me is because opiates are based on opium, which is based on the poppy plant, which has been with us from the beginning of time. There's a lot of interesting stuff when you go back to some of the oldest civilizations like China and Iraq, and you say, oh, China, you can't learn anything. They're not Christian. Folks, they're the oldest written civilization in existence. What's good about them is we know about the Tower of Babel and the separation. They're one of the only countries that stayed relatively intact. So we know how, you know, from the very beginning, when they came from the Tower of Babel or whatever, or right around that time, that opiates were a very important part of their life then. They grow in the earth. They're cheap. They're free. Almost now. Anything that they find in the earth that they can use for medication, and believe me, there is countless things, you'll never read about it, but then what they'll do is they'll create a synthetic a similarity to it, patent that, put it in a pharmaceutical, and charge a small fortune for it. That's what they want. The reason, part of the reason the big pharmaceutical companies are so opposed to opiates is because they're not profitable at all and everyone can sell them. They want products that only they can sell. So don't be so, you know, bought into this train wreck where they're ruining doctors' lives. And I know multiple doctors that are so terrified to prescribe opiates. They're just terrified. And then, you know, some of them end up on the streets and, you know, and then people over-exaggerate the web. The web is a big deceiver. There was an account years back when the DEA was giving testimony before Congress about how bad the drug problem had become. And they used testimony, believe it or not, from online blogs, which is totally stupid because they never talk to the people. And they tried to show these writings on these blogs of how much drugs people were getting and how much they were taking, and it was just overblown. After the hearing, a friend of mine who's well-connected in government told me they discovered that the DEA had created those false personalities online to try to lure in other drug people. to set them up for stings. So they accidentally use their own writings, their own exaggerated false representations of a created character that supposedly is dealing in extraordinary amounts of drugs. They use that as their testimony in their own hearing against Congress to get different legislation passed. Supposedly by accident. Maybe I'm not so sure it was. And we could go on, you know, about everything, folks. But you got to be careful what you put in your head. When it comes to video games, you know, the desensitization's bad. TV, folks, you got to watch. You've got to watch. You've got to avoid what's wasteful and worthless. When you turn on the television, would you let those people in your house? Would you let them talk the way they're talking? Would you let those people behave the way they're behaving on your television? If you wouldn't let those people come into your house and behave the way they're behaving on TV or say what they're saying, get it out of your living room. Shut the thing off. Find something else to watch. The problem is, it's frustrating. There's hardly anything worth a hoot to watch out there anymore. But, you know, we weren't made to sit in front of the boob tube our whole lives. It's getting to the point where they're saying that children are spending 8 hours a day on some form of electronics. In other words, you know, iPads, laptops, television, iPhones, video games, whatever. Our kids are spending 8 hours a day plugged into this stuff. No wonder obesity's out of control. One out of every four children now are obese. And, you know, some people say, I had a guy say, well, I watched this show and it was foul and immoral and everything. He goes, well, if you look beyond all the adultery and all the foul language, that's actually a pretty good show. And, you know, the thing that went through my mind is, if you dig in the trash long enough, you are eventually going to find something good in there. But how long, you know, do you dig in the trash? I hope not. You know, you get, I mean, I know there's dumpster divers out there, just like there's people that are addicted to filthy pornography. That doesn't make it okay. I mean, a dumpster diver is not exactly the pinnacle of society. So we, as believers of all things, you have the Holy Spirit within you. You're dragging him everywhere you go, everything you do. The Holy Spirit, which is the entity of God, the essence of God, as a believer, dwells within you. Everything you do, if you sit and you watch filth, whatever it may be, the Holy Spirit of God is with you. You know, you remember the old, what would Jesus do? I mean, literally, in this case, what are you making Jesus do? So be aware of that, please. And just, you know, be wise. I mean, it's like you can get into so much trash so fast in this world. And the devil, you know, you look at Sodom and Gomorrah. Even Lot was gone. I mean, he wanted to give his daughters up to homosexual rapists, his virgin daughters. That's a sick man. He should have been stepping up saying, you kill me or take me or whatever it may be. But no, he wanted to do this. This is a sick thing. Sodom and Gomorrah was polluted. They didn't start out that way, I'm sure, but for some reason they were getting peddled filth. And who knows, you know, I mean, who knows the whole story there? We know it was destroyed, and that's about all we know. 1 in 4 kids are overweight or obese. 74.1% of the U.S. population is considered overweight or obese. This phenomenon is spreading from the U.S.-made foods, and on it goes. I mean, it deposits fat in all of our organs. I mean, every one of them. And you need to think about that, folks. I mean, we've got to have our heart right before God. We are a living sacrifice. But I'll tell you also, you know, Proverbs 22:4 says, the reward of humility and fear of the Lord are riches, honor, and life. And I talked earlier, about fear of the Lord. You've got to fear and respect him. It's not a casual relationship, and it's not a legalistic, judgmental relationship. I've seen it all. I mean, I've seen families that see somebody in the church that's struggled with something, and they want to blackball them. They want to isolate. They want to go into the church and tear it out and get rid of it. I'm not talking about people that are intentionally destructive or divisive to the church. I'm talking about normal human beings that struggle with normal problems. These people will actually extricate those believers. They don't want them. They're putting on a phony front, and they want everybody else around them to do it as well. So the other day, I don't have a lot of time left, but the other day, I was kind of highlighting this economic report that had come out where it said the U.S. economy is in a grip of deep dysfunction since the dawn of the new century. He talked about wealth creation is booming, but there's a huge segregation. Under Obama, the middle class is ultimately destroyed. Money was going to the poor or the rich. The fact that the growth rate in America is terrible, the per capita growth, GDP rate was way down. If it was what it used to be, we'd be at 50% higher GDP. America's witnessed a dreadful collapse of our workforce. The labor trends are way down. They've dropped by 15. Labor participation's down by 15% since 2000. The incomes are down. You know, it sounds negative, but folks, the fact of the matter is, it kind of is. The unemployment rate, is up. I could go on and on. I think you get the picture. It's not a pretty picture. The unexpected and largely unnoticed fall off of work rates for prime age women is also another interesting thing. There are more women going back home. They overemphasize the need for a woman to work. And my daughter just had a baby. The baby's about 3 months old. She got 6 months paid, 6 weeks paid maternity leave and 6 weeks unpaid. When the time was up, she decided she wasn't going back to work. She knew that that baby needs her. And if you're in that position and you can do anything to prevent your wife from working, and I know there's women out there that say, oh, but I love to work, you don't want a nanny or a babysitter or a daycare raising your child. You need to raise that child. If you have mental problems and you're a bad mother, then maybe. But other than that, that child needs you. The first 5 years of a child's life is when their moral fiber is embedded in them. When you think they're learning the least, they're picking up the most. They develop their moral platitudes, their absolute moral foundation in the first 5 years of life. That's why when kids are adopted at 5, 6 years old from these terrible backgrounds, they don't cease the bad behavior. They just continue on because it's ingrained in them. By the age of 12, they've established their basic social foundation. So the personality that's formed in a child by the age of 12 is generally the basis for their personality the rest of their life, the way they interact with others, the way they perceive things. So much happens at such a young age. We've got to be there with our child. Other things the study showed: family breakdown, secularization and decline of faith, low civic involvement or engagement. People aren't engaged in their communities anymore. Low health progress despite all the money devoted to our medical services. Just like our education, the more money we put into our medical system, the worse it gets, the sicker we get. They've found a rise in death rates for all, including middle-aged U.S. whites, mostly due to drug and alcohol abuse that they say, but also just, a lot of that stress-induced. People's lifestyles are difficult. They're uncomfortable. They've got lots of debt, nowhere to turn. They're talking about opioid and heroin epidemics. They're really on this kick right now. They're just really pushing this hard. I'm not sure what the whole logic behind that is, the whole purpose, but I think it's Big Pharma. As of 2013, one-fifth of all 25 to 55-year-old civilian men were on Medicaid. Between the ages of 25 and 55 now, 20%, one-fifth of all men are on Medicaid. This is what Obama's done for us. The expansion of our criminal class, the population that's sentenced to prison or convicted of felonies, continues to rise. We're at a point now where I read 1 out of 8 and now 1 out of 7 of all adult males have been convicted of a felony. I mean, folks, our criminal penal system is bad. We put laws out and we never repeal them, and we overreact. The courts destroy lives. They do in so many cases. I mean, they're necessary for true criminals, but you think of the number of people that go through that the first time, and to be convicted of a felony is a big deal. And like I said, it says the fact 90% of all sentenced felons are out of confinement and living among the populace. It says the number of current and former felons is estimated to be nearly 30 million people in 2010, according to the study. That's 1 out of 10 people in society are ex-cons. There's 1 in 7 male adults in America has a felony conviction in their criminal records, and the ex-cons are a statistical invisibility. That's a huge thing for unemployment. The odds of the former felons reentering the workforce are, you know, stacked against them, and so on. We've got a heavy downward negative trend, and this country's sick and it's unhealthy. And just to keep it simple, we've got to go through the hard times to have good times come back. You want to be prepared for hard times, and that's what we do financially. You can give Coins Plus a call. We do portfolio building. We do IRAs, 401ks. We'll help you secure stuff. We buy stuff. If you've got old scrap gold jewelry, diamonds, quality diamonds, we buy it all. Coins Plus, 444-0044 or toll-free 877-TAP-COIN or through the website at coinsplus.com, where our previously recorded radio shows are always available to you. Thank you again for another week on this earth. Take care, God bless, and we'll be back Monday. Bye-bye.